Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of Indie Streak. If you haven't listened to my other shows, they're archived on this page on blogtalkradio.com/IndieStreak. Just scroll down and you can hear my interviews with other industry professionals. I've done several now. I interviewed Rick Caritas of Walk a Mile in My Pradas, the writer of that movie. Also Scott Cardinal, the director of The Legend of Ivan Tours, and the director of Prohibition and the South Florida Connection, Steve Waxman. Those are all up to listen to whenever you get a chance. Also, check out my other show, Basics of the Biz, here on Blog Talk Radio as well. And today, we are going to have the director of the movie Seducing Charlie Barker, Amy Glazer. She's going to be logging in to talk to us shortly. Now, this is a movie that was shown recently at Living Room Theater at FAU in Boca Raton. And she'll be calling in a minute to talk to her more about the process. It was a really fun film. Hopefully she could tell us how you could check it out if you missed it at the theater. But this film is going to be available, I'm sure, on her website or on her and in some other way. So we'll find out more about that when she calls us today. And also you could check out the IMDb for that movie, Seducing Charlie Barker, and go to my website, which is independentstreak.ning.com, and you can find out more about the film. I wrote a little review there, but it has a lot of funny characters. I kind of compared it to Curb Your Enthusiasm. It was just one of those very realistic films that kind of went back and forth between the characters, and you never really knew what was going to happen next. And each of the characters was really interesting. That's what I found exciting, and they got more interesting as the film went along. There was a character who was pretty much just a social climber and wanted to get into the industry and was very interested in the main character, Charlie Barker, and she pretty much did whatever she could to win him over. Meanwhile, he was kind of a lowlife at this time. He used to be an actor, and now he was, you know, trying to make it again and having difficulty doing so. And he's married to a character played by Daphne Zuniga, who is in the television production world and basically a workaholic, much like myself. And she's basically just trying to, you know, win him back and just be a good wife. And she had to deal with all of him, all of his being depressed and that type of thing. There's also a best friend in the movie played by David Wilson Barnes. He plays Lewis, who is kind of an underdog. It just seems like nothing is going right for this character. And he tries to win over that social climber, Cleo, who is one hot number that they meet at a party. And that doesn't turn out too well for him. It's just when he thinks he has something and he his life is going to change for the better, it all falls apart for Lewis in this movie. And the movie was shown at the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival back in, I believe it was 2010. And I'm sure she put in other film festivals as well. She kind of put it on the film festival circuit. So, you know, you never know, like I said, where it's going to show up next. And you always want to keep tuned to my independentstreak.ning.com. Because I will have all kinds of different information on there about various different films that you can check out the reviews and you can, you know, see what's going on in the industry here in South Florida. Once in a while, I have things in other areas too, such as in Los Angeles, you know, that other areas, New York. So you want to check that out and find out what's going on. Also, my other show, Basics of the Biz, is available on Blog Talk Radio, where I just basically give tips about the industry, and you can call into that show and you can ask me questions whenever you want on the show. I do it 1 o'clock in the morning on Thursdays, so you want to check out that. And I've been an actress for, gosh, I just want to say 14, 15 years, so I've been doing it for quite a while. And, you know, you can check that out as well. Hopefully I think we might have her on the line now. Let me check and see if I've got Amy on the line.
Hi,
okay,
yes, I'm here.
Amy. Are you there?
I couldn't get onto a landline, so I'm in San Francisco and talking to you from my cell phone. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you. So we have Amy Glazer finally, the director of Seducing Charlie Barker, and I was just talking on and on about your wonderful movie. And you have a whole family background in the industry, so maybe you could tell us a little bit about that to start out with.
Sure. It's definitely part of all of our mythic unconscious, I think. Somehow it's in the blood. But my uncle, Sidney Glazer, was a wonderful movie producer. And my brother, Mitch Glazer, is a screenwriter and showrunner for Magic City. For Stars now, and also a filmmaker. And then it just keeps going. An uncle was also a musician, Tom Glazer, who scored A Face in the Crowd. And his son, Peter Glazer, is a playwright and a director. So the family definitely, has a tradition in performing arts and in, storytelling.
Great. And you've done mostly theater work, and you kind of fell into film, so maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you do in theater in the San Francisco area and then how you got into film.
It's interesting because theater definitely was the impetus for all three films that I made because they all came from plays. I'm a theater director and have been raising a son for 17 years in the Bay Area, which is where I do most of my directing. And all three films began as plays, Drifting Elegant by Steve Belber and Ball Lightning by Barry Gifford. And then for different reasons, I decided to try to translate them or adapt them. And now it's become, because this is the third one, you start figuring out, how to crack the code, how to adapt something from stage, which is totally language-driven, to film, where you're supposed to show, or you can show instead of tell, and then it's so much richer when you do that. So by this last one, I pretty much understood that if there was a monologue, I turned it into a scene. And, and if she describes the day, I can show it, and I can get rid of certain dialogue because just a look will give us that information or give us that sense of irony. So it's just kind of learning to translate. But because theater is the thing that I've done the longest, it's a nice place for me to start in terms of understanding the story and the world of the story and who the characters are. So I kind of, it's almost as if I'm writing it when I direct it because I dissect a piece beat by beat by beat, and then turning it into a film isn't as hard as you think. Mm-hmm. Because I know it already.
Right. And what was it like to work with the writer of this, Teresa Rebeck?
Oh, my God, it was a joy. Teresa, it was an interesting triumvirate because it was Teresa Rebeck as the writer, me as the director and working on the adaptation, and then Lynn Webb, my producer, is also a woman. Mm-hmm. So it was very much a story about women and by women, and it's not what you expect in many ways because it's also about bad behavior. But Teresa's amazing, and she just, because she knew me as a director and because I had already directed the play successfully, she really trusted me and gave me almost carte blanche in terms of, taking chances. In fact, she encouraged me. She would say, cut more, just do it. So it made it much easier for me to not be so reverent about every, beat or moment or word from the play. And then, of course, the actors had all done the play. Did you know that?
Yeah. It's really interesting. So it must have been interesting for them to bring it down to a film setting.
Well, it was, and in some ways they had the hardest adjustment because they didn't understand that it no longer was a play; it was now a film, and things that worked perhaps in the production that they did of the play wasn't where I was going in terms of the film. And of course, the story is even different; the beginning and the ending is different,
mm-hmm.
The arrangement of events. So So that, I think, was hard, more challenging for them, but they knew the characters so well that when you gave them an adjustment, it was very easy for them to, you know, take a different tack.
And you had Daphne Zuniga as part of your cast. How did you get her? Well, she was part of the play and you just saw her there? Or?
Right, right. No, okay. She was in the play that I directed. So actually, it was during the actor strike. And so when I was casting the play called The Scene, which is what the film came from, and a friend had said that, you know, Daphne was in L.A. but was interested in doing theater. And anyway, I called her, and it turned out she knew the play, and she was really excited to do it. So she came, as she would say, while others were having face work done during the strike, she decided to do a play because she hadn't done a stage play, I think, in years. And so she came to San Francisco and had a little, a little change of pace, did the play. The strike ended. She went back to work. And then when we did the film, she came back for the film.
Okay. And you got some of your budget from this producer that you found, and you had a lot of product placement in there. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a Yiddish word called beshert, which means meant to be, and actually
right.
That's the name of our Lynn and my production company. But this man had come to see the play. His name is Maurice Cambar, and he's our executive producer, and in many ways a very creative producer. He's just kind of an amazing guy. He's an inventor, and he's an idea person, and he just, you know, he came to see the play and knew me and my work in the area with new work and just said, this is fabulous. This should be a film. And I went, yeah, great. You know, and then it was like one of those things where you have a conversation in a bar or over dinner and it doesn't really mean anything. And then he followed up, and I was actually in Miami with my family, and he called and said, so, are you going to do it? You know, and he kept saying, when the curtain goes down, no one's going to ever hear this great writing. You know, it's just, he said, it just deserves to be captured. And then, of course, he was thinking of capturing it more basically, I think. But being the kind of A-type gal I am, I went, well, yay, we could do this. And then I started asking all my theater friends for favors. I mean, after 20 years of directing theater in the Bay Area, I know everybody. I know the best designers and the best, you know, so everybody kind of came around me like the red balloon, all my old, you know, all my theater friends. And so I was able to pull actors in wherever I would think of a little part. I'd just pick up the phone and call an actor that I had, you know, been working with for years and years and say, can you come and play the agent? Or, you know, so it was really, it was serendipitous in that regard. But Maurice just believed in it. It was his idea. And I have to say, I can't even take credit. I was working on a different adaptation from a novel into a film at the time when he said, well, I think this should be a movie. But, you know, I trusted him. He also invented Sky Vodka, you know, the distillation process, and came up with Sky Vodka and then, you know, sold it and now has another vodka. So he had all these vodkas, and I thought, well, then we don't have to worry about getting releases and stuff. I can show it everywhere. And I love the idea of it being called Blue Angel, which is his new vodka. And because she was kind of like this Blue Angel character, you know. So It tied in.
Vodka kind of became a person in the movie.
Vodka became a character. Absolutely. Vodka was a character. And unfortunately, you know, in terms of representing, you know, the demonic, you know, the typical morality tale, the fall from grace, it was the perfect lure. That and, you know, and the woman in the red dress. Clea.
You also had a lot of great music in this film, including Bruce Fowler, who has worked with Frank Zappa and Quincy Jones. How did you get the music together for this?
This was just a joy. Again, it was just the way things come together. I kept feeling like I wanted a jazz score. It, just like the vodka was a character, I felt like New York is very much a character in this. And so I wanted, I really wanted a sound that was going to be iconic, that wasn't just going to be, you know, a pop song that was going to go out of phase in a few months. I wanted something that was about, you know, about a tango. And so when a friend of a friend put me together with Bruce, and he saw the footage and just loved it. I think as a musician, he could relate to the temptation as well. And I told him that I felt like that the whole story was a kind of a tango, an interesting dance between, you know, danger and also between living a life of meaning and not. And he went off and just started creating these pieces. And then some he had, and they just were perfect pieces that totally worked. There's a song, Canon de Chez, when he's just wandering around the streets when he's really practically homeless or you know, sleeping on couches at friends' house and stuff. And it's just such a beautiful trombone solo that Bruce plays that, God, every time I hear it, it just you know, presses on my heart in such a beautiful way. So that was just fabulous luck. And the fact that, he, you know, that somebody like Bruce Feller was attracted to the material, because he had also done the score for The Good Shepherd. De Niro loves him. And I heard that score too. And I thought it was really smart. He's a, you know, he's a brilliant musician, and he's friends with all these brilliant musicians in LA. So the day we recorded, I flew up and they were all going to rehearsal. They were all playing in the Academy Awards, and they stopped up at his place, at his studio first. And we had the film up and we showed them, you know, the film. And I kind of talked about what was happening in different spots that we knew we were going to have music for. And, you know, he'd done all the orchestration and stuff. And, God, they played so beautifully. It was just such an amazing experience. And in some ways, these people were more famous than any of the actors or any of us. You know? So it was like these amazing musicians. Because also Bruce does all the orchestration for Hans Zimmer film, for all the Hans Zimmer films.
Oh, okay.
So Bruce knows everybody.
This movie is supposed to take place in New York, but it was primarily shot in San Francisco. And I know you were mostly in one particular building. Maybe you can tell us about that and how you got that location.
Well, you know, again, my angel, Maurice Kambar, the executive producer, has this amazing building situated in the most stunning part of San Francisco. Unfortunately, since we had to cheat it for New York, we couldn't show the views, but out of every window you can see a bridge. But and as luck would have it, many of the floors were vacant. So we were able to turn them into our sound stage and do all of our interiors there and architecturally just change the look and feel so that the rooms seem different and give them a kind of a New York flavor. And then the actors lived and stayed on one floor, and I stayed on one floor, and all of our cinematographer and all of our gaffers and grips all stayed. So I was able to bring in a lot of people from LA who were former students of mine, because I'm also a professor, a film professor. So a lot of my former students who are now working in the industry came back at next to nothing, you know, just for putting them up and feeding them. They came back to work on this, and it was just so fabulous. It was very Cassavetes-like because we were all together, so I was able to shoot all day and then late at night knock on the door of a former student who was transferring the film and saying, could I watch the dailies? I think I forgot something. Or, you know, it was very organic. It was definitely guerrilla style, but it was also it worked. The process was very, you know, we all worked as an ensemble. And I imagine it was the way John Cassavetes and his little team put together films. You know, we were all committed to the story. They all knew me and trusted me. And living together in this gorgeous place just made it all the easier. You know, there were no commute issues.
Right. And how long did it take you to film?
A total of 21 days, and that includes the 3 days in New York. And what we did with New York, I had this amazing AD, Bertola, who lives in New York, and I basically told him the iconic places that for me were New York, and then he also knows New York like the back of his hand. And so even though we only had 3.5 days, maybe 4 days, and it was totally guerrilla style, we used NYU students to help us, you know. And but in spite of that, we really got – it feels like New York because we got these really distinct glimpses of the city that, you know, helped connect the dots.
Mm-hmm. Set the stage. If you could do it again, what would you change? Would you change anything?
Yeah. If I could do it again, I would have had, like, a real casting director and made sure that at the party scene I wasn't running, you know, into the streets grabbing homeless people and saying, wear my coat, pretend that you're... I would have had... I would have been able to, you know, have all the background people. But, you know, I guess at the end of the day, when a story is good, when the writing is there and when the acting is there, you buy into the story. And so even if the background isn't as posh as in my mind I had wanted, and, you know, the fashion wasn't as, you know, whatever. I mean, in spite of that, because the characters are so vivid and the acting is so good and the story is well written, you kind of forgive those things. So, but that's what I would, that's the only thing I think I would do differently, is I would have definitely, like, put a little bit more money in background casting.
Okay. And what do you
think
people are
I was going to say it aged me. It aged me having to do it all myself. I mean, at the end of the day, like, when I was chopping up my own olives and trying to make it look like caviar, I thought, you know, in the real world, I'm sure there are people that do this for you, you know, so I think I would have spent some money hiring those people.
So what do you hope people walk away from after seeing this movie?
I hope that it makes us look a little closer at our values and at the choices that we make in our lives, and how celebrity and fame can be so seductive, and money. But at the end of the day, when you lose your soul, it's you know, what does it mean? And so to choose a life of meaning versus one of superficiality and meaninglessness is has its ramifications. So I guess I just hope people walk away sort of doing a little self-examination as well, because as I certainly have, which is why I kind of understand this story so well,
mm-hmm.
because I know how seductive it is. And I think that's why we changed the name too, because I felt that at the core it is satirical and it's very ironic, but at the core of this story, it's about the danger of valuing some of these, you know, less valuable elements in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I think,
and how can somebody see the?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, you go.
How can somebody see the movie? Is it going to be in any other theaters, or can they go to your website or anything like that?
No, they can see it now. Everybody can buy it on video on demand. So it's on everything. It's on all your, Comcast, my mind has just gone blank. I'm in rehearsal, so I'm actually already rehearsing a play. But but you can
what's your website?
Get it on... Okay, it's SeducingCharlieBarker, BARKER.com. And
okay.
And we're also on Facebook. You can like us on Facebook. But you can download it. All my friends are telling me they're watching it in the comfort of their own home. So you can definitely get it on video on demand, whatever your carrier is. They all have it right now. Seducing Charlie Barker.
Okay, and then your next thing is you're rehearsing for a play.
Yes, I'm directing a play right now. Yeah, in San Francisco at my theater home, which is by another fabulous playwright, Gina Giuffrido, and it's called Becky Shaw. And then after that, I'm directing a play at San Jose Repertory Theater by Teresa Rebeck called The Understudy. So I'm doing another play of Teresa's. So I get to live in her orbit. And also, you know, Teresa has, she's the showrunner, the writer and producer of a TV show that's just about to open called Smash. Have you heard about Smash at all?
I've heard of it. I don't know anything about it, but I've heard of it.
Well, it's actually fabulous. And Spielberg, I think, is producing it. And Angelica Houston is in it. But, you know, she's just such an amazing writer that anything she touches, she's like a fly on the wall, and she knows this world. And Smash is about putting together a Broadway musical, I think. But actually, I really don't know, but I know it's about, on some level, the, you know, entertainment industry. But anyway, so I'm very excited about the fact that after this play, I go to another play by Teresa, and who knows, that could end up being a movie as well.
So you don't have a film in the works right now, but you never, keeping it open, basically.
Actually, I do. Actually, we do have a film in the works. Are you kidding? Yeah, it's also, it's also a play, was a play. We're already on to the third draft of the screenplay by Rebecca Gilman, another wonderful woman playwright and screenwriter. She wrote the film Spinning into Butter, which was also a play. And it's called Blue Surge, and it's about hookers and cops and the glass ceiling and class. I guess mostly it's about class issues of status and class and, you know, being born into, you know, as much as one would think there's this, you know, opportunity for to move within the stratas in many ways, you're sort of locked into what you're born into. And anyway, it's a beautiful, beautiful story, and I'm very excited to get that one up and running. But and it's the same thing. It's sort of what I do now. I learn a text and a story inside out, having directed it, because I did the West Coast premiere at the Magic Theater of Blue Surge, which got really great reviews and everything. And then once I know it and I have a relationship with the writer, then we work together to adapt it. And it's really fun. It's my bliss.
Do you have a personal website that people can look on to see your next upcoming projects too?
You know, I don't. I'm so busy doing these projects that I never like take a moment to do that. But I'm working on it. But if they go to Seducing Charlie Barker, mm-hmm. I guess that's the best way to find me. But also, they can email me at amy.blazer@sjsu.edu if someone wanted
SJSU.
To contact
uh-huh.
me. Yeah.
Okay, and if you let me know, I'll let my audience know too.
That's great. That's great. Well, actually,
yeah.
I'm actually working right now on a website. So when that's up and ready, I'll get it over to you. How's that sound?
That sounds good. It looks like we're running out of time.
Well,
I'm glad you're finally able to connect with me.
Me too.
Well,
and,
get back to work.
Thanks again. Yeah. I can see my stage manager is already like pointing at her wrist. but you know, it doesn't stop. But anyway, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate your championing the film. I'm very, very proud of the work, and I definitely want people to see it. But yes, video on demand is the way to get to it right now. Oh, and I guess I should also tell you one more thing, that it's going to be released in DVD on Valentine's Day, February 14th.
Oh, great.
So then they can also buy it on DVD.
Okay, great. Well,
all
I will
right.
talk
so
to
much.
You later, Amy. Thank you.
Oh, Rachel, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. So I'm glad we were able to talk with Amy. But again, go to her website. You can listen to this again. So if you missed it, you can go back and you can listen to her email and to her website information. In the meantime, go to my website, independentstreak.ning, ning.com, where you can see the full review that I did about the film. And also, you want to check out my book if you haven't yet. Basics of the Biz is available on Amazon.com. Let me just throw that plug in there. That's about the acting industry if you're interested in getting involved in the acting industry. Also, I will have another Indie Streak show next Sunday at 1 o'clock, and you never know who I'll be interviewing next. And like I said, you can go back and you can listen to my archives, interviews with other industry professionals here on the show. And you can check out my other show, which is Basics of the Biz, here on Blog Talk Radio. Also, on Facebook, check out the Palm Beach Filmmakers. They're doing a lot of activities and events for those in South Florida. So you want to check that out. I will be doing a seminar with them on the 28th. So check that out as well. But thank you for tuning in today, and I will talk to you guys next Sunday at 1 o'clock, and I will talk to you then. Thanks so much. Okay, bye-bye.